Let the band play.
Baby, lately I've been going crazy. I've been going crazy lately. I've been going crazy, crazy. Yeah, I've been going crazy, crazy. Yeah, yeah. I've been getting paper, paper. Made a hole in without a motherfucking major label. Yeah, they like clock, you major. I just set a new set of poles on a new set.
Alrighty, welcome back to the Future of NFT Podcast, the most efficient and realest podcast in the NFT world. I'm your host, Jared. Today, we have a spicy one. If you're new to NFTs, Web3, I'd highly suggest you start at episode 1, where I explain NFTs to my mom, work your way all the way through the catalog. I'm super confident either I or one of the guests we've had on will teach you something 100%. If you're not new here, welcome back, baby. This episode, again, it's a spicer. So please enjoy the show. Alrighty, so today we have a very special guest. Today we have Mr. Brian D. Evans. Brian is an angel investor and entrepreneur with a knack for solving important entrepreneurial problems for companies through innovative strategy, disruptive business models, creative user acquisition, product design, a world-class network, and a lifetime of digital marketing experience. Brian's online advertising, marketing, and consulting agency made the Incorporated 500 list of fastest-growing private companies in America, ranking top 25 advertising and marketing companies in America. BDE Ventures now serves as a prolific venture studio, advisory, and consultancy. Brian was on 240 Under 40 lists in 2023. Additionally, Forbes listed Brian on the Crypto Top 40. Brian also starred in the Next Crypto Gym TV series as one of the three judges in an apprentice-style show that will be available across global platforms. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Yeah, awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, Brian. So I always like to start, I think, people's past, like kind of like where they just originally started, where their brain was originally. Like, can you take me back to middle school, high school, Brian? Like, what were you thinking? Like, what did you think your career path was going to be? Like, did you have something set in stone? Like, I'm going to be this? Or was it kind of everywhere? Like, what was your take there?
No, actually, in that time of my life, I was very confused of what I would be doing in the future. Struggled a lot in school. I think the traditional school system didn't work too well for me. So I kind of naturally gravitated towards figuring out things for myself, alternative learning. And, you know, I think that eventually led me to becoming an entrepreneur, just not finding a fit in a traditional path. So I'm very grateful for that experience because I think it led me to where I ultimately needed to be. And, you know, it's not for everybody, right? Some people fit perfectly into being a doctor or a lawyer or something, right? And that's amazing. I kind of wish I had that in a way, right? But, you know, I've gotten into this sort of entrepreneurship, business owner, marketing kind of world and many things from there. And yeah, it really just stemmed. It actually, interesting you say that because it did stem from that experience and you know, basically struggling through school and finding an alternative path.
Got it. So now, Brian, just getting into kind of just, I guess, like NFTs, right? Like just so we can start, just in like layman's terms, right? Like just if a grandma out in Arkansas right now is listening, right? Like what are NFTs, right? And what makes it
Yeah, I think in a simple sense, right? You know, I think, you know, if we're talking to a grandma out in Tennessee, right? You know, they'd probably be familiar with the museum, maybe the Louvre in Paris, right? Which hosts the Mona Lisa, for instance, right? Famous artist created the painting. It's verified by the Louvre that it's the real one. It's worth however many hundreds, if not billions, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. And that's the one. That's the one of one, the super rare painting that's been verified by the Louvre. So that's how traditional sort of art works. An NFT, in a very simple sense, you know, think of digital art, right? People can draw on their computer or draw by hand and put it on the computer. The problem for the longest time was that there was no Louvre to verify it, right? So it's just this image out there that can be saved and replicated a million times over until blockchains were created. And this is, in my, you know, I would argue this is the single greatest thing for digital artists. You have artists like Beeple and Xcopy and many others out there. They're doing very, very well, and many smaller ones now, friends of mine that are artists doing extremely well with digital art. Whereas before there was virtually no market for it unless you're licensing out an IP to a brand or something. Now you can actually sell them because a blockchain, just like the Louvre can a painting, a blockchain can verify the authenticity of that paint, of that drawing or art or whatever it is, to say, yep, this is the one. This is the one. And you know, people typically make the argument, oh, you can just save it or screenshot it. Well, yeah, sure, I can go to the Louvre and take a picture of the Mona Lisa as well. But yep, no one's gonna buy that from me. Same with a blockchain and verifying a piece of art. It's the authenticity that this is the actual one, that this is the one that holds the value. So in a very, very simple sense, it's a digital way to verify something is what someone says it is. You know, and it can store value and be a representation of some kind of asset as well. So there's all sorts of other, but art is the very most basic sense of what an NFT can be used for. And some people just call them digital assets. There's different terms that are used. I don't have any bias either way. I think, you know, because of a lot of bad stuff that happened in the industry, NFTs kind of got a bad name, but some people just refer to them as digital assets. So there's many, many use cases from there as well that go on.
Got it. So now, Brian, this is always just a fun question for me. What is like your family or friends think of NFTs? Anybody like, Brian, come on, like I'll just screenshot that, right? Like, does anybody give you pushback? Like, what do they think about it?
Yeah, of course. And I think it's the same argument that crypto's had for the longest time of, oh, what's this made up digital money? You know, it's funny because it's funny or not funny. Because as we know, in the United States, for instance, there's, you know, what's called fractional reserve banking, which basically means they don't hold all the money that they, you know, if you put in, you know, X dollars, they go and invest that. That's not just sitting there. Whereas crypto is actually the opposite. In many ways, it is backed one-to-one because it's been demanded so heavily by the industry. So it's become better in many ways. So same thing with a blockchain for an NFT. It's immutable, and you know, it's not just some arbitrary person or you know, just deciding that something is, you know, we always see the movies where there's like a fake piece of art that's just like someone's paid off and they say, yep, this is the one, and they sell it for $80 million and scam somebody, right? Well, that can't happen on a blockchain because it's all out there and it's immutable. Once it's printed and you know, the block goes through and the transaction goes through in the blockchain, it's just there to be verified. So the speculative value is a different thing, and that's what people kind of make fun of sometimes, of, oh, these monkey pictures are selling for hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, you know. But you know, you can make the same argument about traditional art. There's a picture, you know, think of a Picasso. It's like, you know, no offense to to that, but it's like, it's not a you know, it's sophisticated in some ways but simple in other ways, right? Where it's like, I'm sure people have made fun of that, of, oh, the picture of some, you know, squiggly dog, it looks like a child could have done it, is worth hundreds of millions, if not billions. So it's all in the eye of the beholder, right? When it comes to art. But you know, and that's just one side of it, right? Because now we're getting into digital assets that can hold a house deed, for instance, right? So if it's a better way to store something, it's a better way to verify something, it just, you know, that whole speculative side just kind of goes out the window, and it says, wow, this is just a better way to do it, plain and simple.
100%. So Brian, when did NFTs, I guess, just like very first hit your radar? Like, when did you just first hear about an NFT, and just like, what was your initial thoughts? Like, did you kind of have like, oh, this is BS, until maybe you saw a use case that you thought was cool and you're like, okay, let me look more into this? Or how did that go for you?
Yeah, so I was in the crypto space since maybe 2014 or so, after Ethereum launched, and I became aware of CryptoPunks sort of relatively early on compared to most. And yeah, I kind of watched them from an observer standpoint, just wasn't quite 100% sold on it. And then I started thinking about video games, and I started to realize, wait a second, people are spending so much money in these video games that, you know, wouldn't it be cool to actually store this outside of the game, where if the game collapses or they stop supporting it in that Call of Duty or, you know, Fortnite environment that people spend thousands and thousands, if not tens of thousands, in some cases, of dollars or more on skins and weapons and guns and all sorts of things that are in a very centralized environment. I thought to myself, wouldn't it be cool if that could be outside of that? And when I saw Bored Apes, so I minted a bunch of Bored Apes, sold them way too early, most of them. But it really clicked in my head around that time when Bored Apes were really taking off that, man, this is the video games could be a really good use case for these digital assets and NFTs. Whether we call them NFTs or digital assets or something else, you know, it's evident that people want ownership. And I think it all comes back to ownership for me. I don't think anyone's out there, you know, some people say, no, none of the gamers want NFTs or digital assets. Let me tell you, there's also nobody out there saying, oh, I want to give Blizzard more of my money and I want them to make more and more money, right? Or PlayStation, or, you know, they're not just donating to these things, right? They for sure would love to own something. Even though it's not about that, it's just a nice gesture. It's a principle of it, that if you're spending money on something, you should actually get it and not just like it's just stuck in some centralized system, you know?
Yep.
So it's really the same. If you believe in, you know, this crypto kind of decentralized future, where not everything is centralized and owned by one or two or three mega companies. I mean, if that's the direction people want to go, I think they're in for a scary surprise in the future that, you know, I feel like I don't want to live in a dystopian futuristic world where it's like three companies control everything. I'd much rather, you know, have, you know, smaller entrepreneurs and small businesses. But that's where we're headed if we don't, you know, go towards this, right? Where it's just the biggest companies, the BlackRocks of the world, are just going to own everything. And it's kind of the trajectory that's already happening, but we at least have to try to, like, you know, stand up and, you know, so that's where ownership goes for me. It's just owning a piece of this and being part in being able to really, otherwise, again, the world is going to be a monopoly of megacorps. And I don't think anyone really wants that.
100%. So now, Brian, taking it back to Sally in Tennessee or Arkansas, right? Like, they own a mom and pop shop. How can they utilize NFTs for their business, like, at this very moment? Like, what is your take there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, I don't think the problem is we're still at the adoption phase and working out use cases. So, yeah, no, digital artists, for instance, I think video games, I think the next sort of bull cycle, I think video games are going to be a huge beneficiary. You know, small, I'm creating a video game, for instance, we're definitely going to use NFTs. You know, we're not going to tell players, no, just give us all your money and you get nothing. No, we're going to say, here, you can own the character that you're building. So I think it's a little bit less for the mom and pop, you know, it's kind of, that's at the crypto sort of adoption phase that I think we still need to have more and more of. So we're starting to see that with smaller tokens. Stable coins is a big part of this for settlements, you know, and transactions. And I think that's where they're going to see it more. There are some things happening where you can sort of store, there's different technology being released, but we're, you know, you can store, you know, tokens or other NFTs within an NFT, almost like a wallet. So there's things happening there that are going to be very interesting. I just don't think we're there yet for just the average business to necessarily be using an NFT. I think what we'll see is we'll see crypto adoption take off more. And again, if that's stable coins, just because they're better in every way or something else, that will then lead people to NFTs, to saying, oh, well, you know, if you want to, you know, rent something, it's actually, you just buy the NFT, right? It works as like a digital contract, essentially, whoever physically has it. So the infrastructure is still being built for many of those, you know, use cases where, you know, and it doesn't mean, and that's the thing, I think that's the sort of red herring here, if you want to call it that, is that we don't, for NFTs or digital assets to succeed, it doesn't really mean that you have to use it at a gas station, right? Yeah. That might just be crypto, right? But for instance, if you want to, you know, sell your house, maybe one day that is an NFT, that is a digital asset. Yeah. So maybe that's where it's more something that's tangible that can be stored digitally in a better way that's immutable. You know, might be more of the use cases. And look, I think it'd be cool as well if we see some Web3 adoption also at the gas station or mom and pop business. And maybe, again, maybe that's stable coins, you know, just because they're faster, cheaper, better in every possible way, really.
Got it. So now talking about interoperability, blockchains, in your opinion, Brian, like, is there a winning blockchain? Like, I always say Ethereum is like the Bugatti of the blockchains. Like, what is your take there?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think they all have their purpose, right? Not all of them, but, you know, Bitcoin obviously becomes the store of value. There's interesting things happening in the inscription side as well. Ethereum definitely for the smart contract layer. Extremely bullish on Ethereum as well. I'm kind of not like a maxi in any category. I think even Solana I'm very interested in. There's others, you know, Polygon, etc., Immutable, and many others that have very not specific use cases, but slightly different use cases. And look, a lot of them market themselves as the same. Oh, we also have smart contracts. We're faster. We're more secure. We're more private. We're better, etc. But I don't. I think we live in a world where there's not going to just be one or two. I think there's going to be a few dozen for different use cases. If you think about this at mass scale, right? If you just assume that one day half of the Earth uses Web3 technology, you know, and blockchains for whatever purpose, that means there's going to be a lot of chains. There's just not going to be one. Even some of the, you know, if you think about traditional tech, there's all these different systems out there, right? So I think, you know, just like you have a you know, a Mac operating system, you've got your iOS, you've got your, you know, your Windows, you've got, you know, Linux, you've got all these different operating systems in a traditional computing world, you're going to have different sort of layers on the block in blockchain world as well. So I see that being multiples. You know, I think Ethereum is high up for many reasons for me, Bitcoin as well. From there, I think things like Chainlink have very practical use cases, Solana, in Polygon and many others, in future ones that we'll see as well, right? So I think there's also a world of layer twos, like, you know, as well, that such as Polygon, for instance, that, you know, will also be very useful for different specific reasons. And I think they're all sort of still carving, you know, one might be the video game blockchain, one might be the payments banking blockchain, one might be the build on it blockchain, Ethereum, right? So I think they just have slightly different use cases. So I don't think we're going to live in a world where there's like just one. I think there's going to be, you know, let's say at least a few dozen that are useful, and then probably, you know, 10 or so that are very useful.
Got it. Now, Brian, talking about gaming again, this, it just seems like just too obvious. What would you say, like, it could be, but just the fact that people don't like the word NFT alone, like, what do you think, like, is that one of the bigger hurdles you'd say for like mainstream adoption, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think the media, you know, definitely for valid reasons in some cases, you know, went hard after the NFT terminology. I'm extremely bullish on Web3 video gaming. You know, it's for many reasons. If you know, a quick history lesson for anyone that's not a hardcore gamer, you know, I go back to the early days of video games were basically closed loop games. You play a shooter game, you play a Mario, you play a little space kind of game, and eventually you die and lose and game over, right? Or an old arcade game where it was like single player, or you know, you basically just lose after a while and you just stop, right? Then they said, okay, well, that's one phase of gaming. We need to make it so people keep playing. So they added multiplayer. You know, from there, they added online gaming where you could play against, you know, people all over the world. They added infinite loop games where you could just keep, you know, basically Candy Crush, where you could just go forever. You know, Angry Birds is like a bajillion levels. You know, you can basically just keep playing on and on and on. Then the online games got so involved, the World of Warcraft, the Call of Duties, you can level up your character forever. There's literally infinite things to do. I could be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure, like, a World of Warcraft, for instance, there's probably nobody, maybe somebody has a Guinness record for this, but I don't think there's anyone that's done everything, right? So there's always something else to do. So you can just keep building your character, keep doing things, keep doing quests, keep doing the new, you know, they always launch new stuff, right? So there's always something else to do, and you can keep building that character. So where does that customization, that ability to build that character, where that naturally leads people to is this player agency, this world of, wait a minute, this is me, this is my character, like, I've built this, so I don't want it just locked into Blizzard forever or whoever, I want to own it. So that's where the idea of ownership comes from video games. So players now more than ever have their identity, there's people that built their identity around video games, right? Yeah. So they really feel like, you know, it's like your online profile picture. It's like it becomes you. So this idea of ownership is really prevalent. And what I think is going to happen from here is that we're going to see a ChatGPT effect with Web3 games. We're going to see some game come out that's just bonkers, crazy, smash hit that people go, oh, that's what it's all about. Oh, and they also have, you know, and the way I see it is I think it's going to be this Web 2.5 kind of world where, you know, you just playing a game, but then on the back end, they say a little pop up comes and says, oh, you realize that this, your character is an NFT and your sword there is also an NFT, you know? And people are going to realize it. And all the big gaming companies of the world, I've got friends at these companies, and, you know, I won't mention any specific ones, but they're all agreeing that all these companies are sitting around having meetings and deciding what they're going to do when Web3 really, really takes off in a big way in another game. And they're all going to immediately launch their strategies. So, yeah, it's a big part of it. And also some things that people don't realize about gaming is that gaming is a huge driver of adoption for blockchains. So DeFi Kingdoms is a really great example. They basically go chain, not chain to chain, but they've gone from several chains, hundreds of millions of transactions that they can drive. And guess why? It's because it's basically taking DeFi tools like swaps and pools and liquidity and buying NFTs and marketplaces and things like that, and basically masking it on the surface level with a game. So it becomes fun. It's a fun way to learn about DeFi and blockchains. So you're basically learning about blockchains through playing a game. And there's many others as well that do similar things in the gaming world. DeFi Kingdoms is just one example. They were on the TV show that I was part of as well. And these are driving hundreds of millions of transactions. And it's a great way to onboard for people to learn about what they're doing. They go both ways. I think blockchains help games. I think games can help, you know, awareness of what is actually happening in this DeFi sort of blockchain world.
Interesting. I like that. So now, Brian, we live in the world of AI, right? Deep fakes. We see them come out all the time. And you kind of touched on personal identity. What do you think about, I guess, maybe .eth, right? Or just personal identity verification, right? In the whole digital realm. Like, what is your take there?
Yeah, I think that's really cool as well. I think ENS domains, ownership of your identity in a decentralized way. You know, it's one of these old school things that you're like, why hasn't this happened yet? You know, if I think about the fact that I still carry around a driver's license or a physical passport, that's probably relatively easy for someone to forge, just baffles my mind. It's 2023, almost 2024. And this is still a thing. You know, there's just so many better ways to do that in a digital form that's provably the, you know, your ID and it, versus just, oh, someone, you know, we always hear about, oh, some young kids are make a fake driver's license or something to buy alcohol or whatever, right? You know, in a digital world, that just doesn't happen because, especially if it's on a blockchain, there's just one of them. So you can't make a fake. So I think it's just a better way to deal in identity, to prove your identity. If you physically have access to that, you know, whatever that asset is, if it's an NFT or something else, in the future, it's a great way to change the model. You know, we don't need these, we don't need a physical ID anymore. There's plenty of them out there. There's a few, that are working heavily on this identity space, to, you know, and it goes to proving who you are online as well. Right. It's still, again, it baffles my mind that to prove your identity online, in most cases, they want you to take a picture of it and send an ID, over email or something. Right. Where there's just a million better ways with Web3 tech to do that.
100%. So now, Brian, talking about marketing, right. How are big brands, or maybe not even necessarily big brands, small to big brands, how are they approaching marketing in Web3? Does anything change? Like, what's different? What do you think there?
I think a lot changes. I think one thing that comes to mind is that, you know, you never saw it before. Going back to video games is one instance. You know, we don't see people really wearing their Fortnite skin or their Call of Duty gun as their avatar online, right? You don't really see that. Or your World of Warcraft character, you don't really see that. But in Web3, you absolutely do. That's your identity. So the marketing is even more viral than Web2, because people, again, this proves why ownership is so important. If I own it and I feel like I own a piece of it, of course I want to represent it online. Of course I'm proud of it. Of course I want to show it off, right? So I'm going to wear that PFP from my favorite project or game or whatever it is, right? And you see that so prolifically in Web3. So the marketing really creates this viral loop that is un, you know, it never happened before in Web 2. So the virality of Web 3 for that reason, and the strength of the communities, it really goes back to in Web 2, you know, for a specific product, you don't really see communities gathering around, you know, I won't pick on any one particular Web 2 product, but just, you know, think of any Web 2 product you use that they don't really have. They might have like a Reddit thread or something, or you know, forum, and they have their own little, you know, discussion thing on the back end in their help section, but they don't have a avid community of people excited about it, right? As you see in Web 3. And in Web 3, you're seeing many, many projects that's a cool, you know, a cool project that communities gather and get excited about because they have some kind of ownership in it, whether it's tokens, NFTs, something else. They can get behind that because they feel like they have a piece of ownership. So I think the marketing just changes completely. And it's really about cultivating a community. And instead of just bombarding people with ads, for instance, in Web 2, and just thinking about ROI and churn and burn and, you know, this kind of stuff, it really forces people in many ways to think about, and it's better from a product standpoint of really getting deep feedback from your users and building something that's going to be more sustainable than the Web 2 versions. And that's why I think that's one of many reasons why I think that Web 3 is just, you know, bound to be more successful, because the feedback loop from the community is so much, they're invested into it, maybe literally or, you know, metaphorically, but they're much more a part of it than they are in Web 2. So you can get that feedback from your community in ways you never really could before, because the participation wasn't there. I'm not sitting on, you know, groups from random Web 2 products and giving detailed feedback and input and helping them market it, but it's absolutely happening in Web 3 all the time, every day, on all of these, on many of these projects. And it's not just like one or two, it's like all of them. There's these pretty, you know, deep communities, and it's not just speculators. It's people that really are interested in the tech and whatever they're building, whatever the topic is, from, you know, gaming to just some cool piece of DeFi tech. They're really geeking out over it, and in a great way. So that's just, yeah, one of many reasons why I see this being way more successful than Web 3 is that idea of being a part of it. And again, the marketing kind of, I guess the point is that the marketing sort of, the network effect is so much stronger in Web 3. You know, you never saw that. You didn't see that in Web 2. I'm not sitting here, like, you have affiliate programs and stuff, and people can make a little bit of money if they're a marketer, but it's more organic in Web 3 because they're really proud of being a part of those communities. So it definitely changes the whole paradigm of marketing.
100%. Now, Brian, I just want to touch on the metaverse for a second. I think a lot of people, when they think of the metaverse, they think it's a, you eat shit and sleep in the metaverse. And it's just, you just have these goggles on and that's it. And that's just how life is. So I always say that we already live in the metaverse. We kind of just live in like a shittier one, right, on our phones. But what do you think about the metaverse? Like, why is there, like, what's the friction there?
Well, I think it's a, you know, we saw some big companies come in and sort of brand themselves around metaverses. And, you know, I think it was probably a relatively smart move for them. Yep. But it's kind of Web 2 players coming in and, you know, it just goes back to that media cycle kind of tainting the space a little bit. And they say, oh, you know, Facebook's in on this now. You know, and it's kind of like, oh, just the Web 2 players just trying to take over another industry. Where I don't really see it like that. I see it as bringing awareness to the space. And, you know, I think that was a great way for them to sell AR, VR goggles. I don't think metaverses have to be only AR, VR. I think of metaverses as concerts, music events, video games, you know, anything and everything. Maybe it's augmented too. It doesn't necessarily have to be only in the, you know, Web 3 sort of world. It can be, you know, a sort of a combination of things. So I think, you know, and again, this goes to video games. This is, if you think that, if you're betting on video games to be successful in Web 3, metaverses kind of go hand in hand with that. And I think, again, it's just a term that people get kind of lost in, like NFTs. Yep. But I just think these digital worlds that merge with gaming and real useful products is really what it's about. There's a lot of people doing things in the music space. We're early in these cycles. And I tell people this for video games too, that a good video game takes years and years to build. many years. And there's been metaverses for sort of a long time, but not with a Web3 component to it of ownership. They've been more centralized. You know, if you think of, you know, even a World of Warcraft is kind of, you know, the gaming environment's kind of like this, you know, servered off metaverse in a sense. But I don't think we've even seen anywhere near close to what can and will exist in a Web3 version of that. So, you know, think of an auction house in a video game that can be really cool in a Web3 world where, you know, it's not just about making money, but it's really about being able to participate in that economy in a different way than you could before. So, yeah, I think metaverse for me, it kind of falls into that video game category where there's definitely cool and exciting use cases there. The current technology out there is good. But I think it's far from fully realized. I think we have a long way to go in that cycle to see kind of what builders are going to build and what users are going to gravitate towards. You know, I think where people get confused and lost is that they say, oh, well, I still want to go to the mall and like look at things and buy them, but I don't really want to do that all in AR, VR. And that might be the case. It's not trying to replace the mall or replace those things. And maybe it will, right? But, that's not really the point. It's really to create these virtual experiences in many ways. Even Zoom, in a sense, if you think of some of these kind of tools that are out there in Web 2, that's kind of where metaverse can kind of go in just a decentralized version of basically what's out there. So that's kind of how I think about metaverse. Is I kind of just think about basically technology that connects people together that is not entirely centralized and owned by the megacorps of the world.
100%. And I think, that's when you're talking about Zoom, like I saw that interview with Mark Zuckerberg and Lex Friedman in the metaverse, and that was hyper realistic. So I think also when people see that, they're going to definitely want to see themselves in hyper realistic, and just, they're going to want to connect in that way too. So I think that's interesting. So now, Brian, tell me about BDE Ventures and kind of like how that came about.
Yeah. So BDE, it's been my basically extension of my marketing agency from 15 years ago. Basically in 2013, 2014, I was building this marketing agency and really just got to the point where I hated it. It was managing clients and employees and, you know, it just wasn't for me anymore. And I loved marketing, but just didn't see myself as someone that wanted to manage hundreds of employees and have hundreds of client accounts and things like that. And while it was going well, you know, it just became something that I didn't really want to do. So I discovered Ethereum in 2014, got into the ICO, after the ICO rather, and just kind of went down the crypto rabbit hole. I was super interested in everything that I was seeing and, you know, slowly started angel investing into the crypto space. And then just slowly over time started consulting for different companies and projects and things in and out of Web3, you know, crypto and Web3. And nowadays we are basically a venture studio. So we're building things like Web3 games, for instance. We're in the film and entertainment space as well. And we're basically, I call it more of an angel investment kind of situation because it's not a fund per se. Although we are doing a fund, more angel investment kind of things. So we've done hundreds of investments in various companies and projects, a lot in gaming and others. And now it's more advisory, consulting, but really a venture studio where we will actively get involved with one or two or three projects and help them build. So that's kind of helping people sort of, I've always had a passion for like early stage entrepreneurship. So my personal passion was just helping people get started and accelerate. So that's why I love angel investing and helping them, you know, with connections and intros. And I really enjoy that early process. So I'll get behind entrepreneurs from various companies nowadays and give them some money, give them some connections, help them however I can, you know, and that early stage stuff just really excites me. I just love that kind of, you know, environment. So yeah, that's kind of mainly what we do and what I do. Just many other things in the crypto space, do personal investments as well. Occasionally we'll help guide people with their marketing and things like that. But, really stay out of the services side these days, but more sort of in a consulting sort of capacity.
Got it. I love that. That's awesome. So now, Brian, I'm just question popped in my head right now. Just what are you, Brian, just excited about just right now at this moment?
Well, I think video games, I always come back to video games. I see it more and more clearly every day that really the use case for Web3 tech to on a grand scale,
yep,
beyond crypto, video games. And I just keep coming back to it. And I just, you know, it's one of those things. It's like when I saw Ethereum and that kind of, you know, even Bitcoin taking off early on, you know, and I had that feeling with Ethereum that, man, these smart contracts, I remember Ethereum was like 20 or 25 bucks. And I was just thinking to myself, this is going to work. This is it. This is going to be such a big change to what we're, and it might take a long time, but there is something here. And I feel the exact same way I did about Ethereum very early on, 2014, 2015, as I do about video games now and Web3, and just saying, man, this is happening. There's really solid builders coming in. You know, there's people building in the space. This is a perfect, it just makes a lot of sense. Gamers, you know, are coming, you know, in parts of the world, right? We saw, you know, more adoption than others, parts of Asia, et cetera, you know, showed a lot more interest. There was the play to earn kind of stuff that, you know, was gimmicky, but it shows what was possible in sort of Web3 gaming. And in the West, it was a little slower adoption curve, probably tainted by the media, of course, in trying to make it all, you know, scams and stuff, which there were, of course. But yeah, gaming for me really is at the top of the list and what I'm personally most excited about and seeing how it's used. And I think, look, there's still problems. We still have to figure. A friend of mine at a big gaming project was telling me that the number one support ticket they have is I lost my seed phrase or lost my keys. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's still a problem, right? So we still have to build the technology, the rails around that. And I think Ledger and some others are building recovery tools, which, you know, if it's done the right way, and Vitalik was also the creator of Ethereum was also talking about, you know, basically giving fragments or shards of your keys to others as like a social backup. And maybe there, whoever figures out what that, I don't know if that's the solution or not, but whatever, there does need to be a solution to that. Yep. You know, it's also a education of the user, right? It's just a paradigm shift of, hey, so you can lose your passwords and you can lose all your stuff and like someone's gonna, you can still forget password and get it back. But in Web3, it's just not really like that. At least, you know, you can't just lose everything, right? So, or maybe you can. Maybe there's a way to do it that someone hasn't thought of yet that does work in a way that's, you know, not as susceptible to scams and fraud and hacks and et cetera as the traditional world. So that's one of the roadblocks for sure. But beyond that, very, very bullish. And I think that's a, you know, that's a huge, that whatever that solution is a billion-dollar industry in and of itself. If there's a way to do that in sort of an authentic, decentralized sort of way where it's, you know, I could see if you, you know, I think it comes back to just redundancy and, you know, okay, you have so many hardware devices, you know, you have so many software devices, you have a phone, you have friends, some combination of those things can unlock, you know, and store your keys basically. Maybe yep. maybe that's the solution. Maybe it's just a redundancy of backups of those things in different places kind of thing. You know, and I know there's people trying to centralize it and saying, oh, well, there's, you know, three or four companies that don't know each other that hold your, you know, different shards of your key or something. I think that's what Ledger is doing. And that's maybe a solution as well for some people. Video games at the very, very top of my list. And of course, just crypto in general, just the use cases of payments and settlement of that side of things. It's just so much easier to transfer. Still to this day, I have friends and even myself gone to the, you know, you go to the bank and they say, oh, you want to send money to Bob in Singapore? And they say, oh, well, do you know Bob? You know, can you show us the contract? Oh, well, this one was flagged. I don't know if we can send this, too much money. And you're like, it's only $4,000. What do you mean I can't send my own money? Whereas crypto, it's like, what's your address? Done, sent. You know, no question. It's, you're the, and there's pros and cons. You're the ultimate, you know, it's not a, whitelist situation. It's a blacklist situation. It's you know, as long as you're not sending money to a, you know, some kind of criminal organization or you know, terrorist group, you're pretty much good to go. You know, whereas banking, traditional banking, is the exact opposite. You know, convince us why we should allow you to send your money to Brian, which to me is just still crazy to this day. But again, not to go down a different rabbit hole, but when you think about this, the idea of traditional banks, and especially in the United States, fractional reserve, meaning they do not have all your money physically, you can kind of start to see why they make it a little bit more difficult to actually send the money out. Versus crypto, where it's like, if you have 100K in your wallet, you have 100K in your wallet. You know, that 100K USDT is 100K USDT. Sure, the value can change, but it's there. It's physically, what's there is what's there. There's no question. It's not like, oh, you have 100K, but on the back end, it's actually not there or something. It's just whatever is there is there.
Yep, 100%. So now, Brian, just finally, like, what advice would you give someone, right? Like, maybe at Thanksgiving, right? Your nephew comes up to you, your niece comes up to you, they're 10 years old. Like, what's your advice to them? They're looking to either create, invest in NFTs, kind of just play around with NFTs for the first time. Like, what do you tell them?
Well, first of all, don't be scared of new technology and industries like this. You know, I think pretty much unanimously, and if sure, you could argue that if it didn't happen how it did, you could play it the other way. But pretty much everybody I know in crypto, the number one regret was just basically not buying more or doing more or being more aggressive, right? And it's, again, hindsight's 2020. It's easy to say that now. It could have crashed and burned and we would be saying, oh, we should have gone smaller, right? But you know, I think especially, and I think it comes down to a personal, like an age thing and a personal risk tolerance thing of, you know, not that I'm telling everyone to go buy crypto. I think if you are buying crypto, and if you, I mean, I am still to this day, if you are buying crypto, and I'm, yeah, again, I'm buying all sorts of different cryptos. I think the DCA strategy is obviously the safest way to do it, where you're buying small amounts over a longer period of time. But the age old advice is, you know, you want to buy in bear markets and you want to sell in bull markets, right? Yep. So as hard as that is, and I think that where I would spend my education, my time, is educating myself on the market cycles. And I think, you know, it's easier said than done, because there's a lot of confusing information about markets in the finance world. And you know, there's huge megacorps trying to counter trade retail and all this kind of stuff. But you know, seeing it's ironic that we're talking about like a BlackRock, for instance, but seeing a BlackRock, like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, I think, asset managers in the world, or at least in the Western world, you know, coming into the space in a very big way, launching an ETF and literally selling Bitcoin, basically. That's if you're looking for a mega bullish sign, that there's your mega bullish sign that the traditional finance world is coming into this space. And sure, maybe they'll mess it up, but you know, the signs are there. This is not some fringe industry. This is an industry now having the biggest wealth managers in the world wanting a piece of it. And now you're talking about hundreds, thousands of salespeople basically all over the planet basically going to be selling Bitcoin and crypto as these ETFs launch. Bitcoin halving is coming. Adoption is up. We're just heading into a bull run right now. So, you know, the writing's on the wall. You know, people can kind of get into this industry or not, but it's happening, and it's, you know, the cycles are continuing how the cycles continue. We just went through a really terrible bear market. We're probably just at the beginning of a bull market now. And you know, it's probably a time to be looking at this industry, whether it's building, whether it's investing, whether it's, you know, anything in between. I'm not the type that just tells people, oh, take all your money and throw it in Bitcoin or Ethereum or something, but yeah. I do kind of give both sides. I say, look, you know, this is what's happening. It's obviously, we've gone through cycles and the adoption is going up and up and up. There's builders in the space. There's lots of money and lots of major players moving in. Decide what you want with that. You know, we're not trying to create a cult here where we're just trying to force everybody into crypto. If you see that this is something you want to be a part of, you know, it's probably a good time to start looking at some tokens and, yep, you know, making some bets. So that's kind of what I tell people usually.
Awesome, Brian. Well, this is easily one of my favorite episodes. Again, I really appreciate you for joining me today.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Alrighty, Brian. You have a great week.
Thanks. You too.
I'm a 90s baby. Lately, I've been going crazy. I've been going crazy lately. I've been going crazy, crazy. Yeah, people going crazy, crazy. Yeah.